When everyone is on the same page, getting things done is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that enables your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
This Washington Post Live podcast is in partnership with Paramount Plus, offering live sports, breaking news, and a mountain of entertainment. Stream all episodes of The Offer now, starring Miles Teller, Matthew Good, and Juno Temple, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
You're listening to a podcast from Washington Post Live, bringing the newsroom to you live.
Hello, and welcome to Washington Post Live. I'm Elahe Azadi, a reporter covering media for The Washington Post. Today, I'm joined by actors Miles Teller and Matthew Good, as well as showrunner Nikki Toscano, to discuss the limited series The Offer, which delves into the behind-the-scenes making of the iconic film The Godfather. Welcome to you all.
Morning.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Great to have you all here together. And remember, we always want to hear from you, our audience. You can share your thoughts and questions for guests by tweeting live at Washington at Post Live. The handle is at Post Live. Let's just jump right in. Nikki, you are the showrunner and you co-wrote the series with Michael Tolkin. Can you tell us a little bit about the origins of the story and how did it come to be?
Absolutely. Al Reddy came in and spoke to Nicole Clemons and Jenna Santoyani at Paramount Studios and was talking about his story, which was a largely sort of untapped story in the telling of the making of The Godfather. There had been a lot of different press over the years, over 50 years, about the making of The Godfather, what went into it, the casting, all of those different kinds of things. And then Michael Tolkin sat down with Al Reddy for, I don't know, about 2 weeks and interviewed him and spoke to him about his experience in the making of this film. And then we largely used a number of other resources to sort of put it all together, whether it be, Robert Evans' book, Peter Bart's book, Mario Puzo's book, interviews that were, done with Francis Ford Coppola, and it all sort of came together. But the heart of the story is Al Ruddy's journey in the making of this film, this sort of outsider underdog who broke into Hollywood, sort of just busted through its doors and was given this incredible movie to produce.
And Miles, you play Al Ruddy, the producer behind The Godfather, and he's also executive producer of The Offer, this series. And Ruddy reportedly told Michael Tolkin that, quote, every day of making The Godfather was the worst day in my life. What was it like having to play this character who is also so intimately involved? The real man is so intimately involved in the project. Were you getting a lot of feedback?
Well, Al, yeah, I mean, I'm playing the man who's producing The Godfather as he's a producer on the show. So he was absolutely involved. I would expect nothing less from Al after, having met him and spent some time with him. But it was tough, man. I think once I really realized, how many balls he constantly had to keep in the air, I think he was a master kind of dealing with so many different types of personalities, and that's why he really made for the perfect person to produce The Godfather, because he could sit with Bob Evans, he could sit with Francis Ford Coppola, and he could, sit with, Puzo. He was an advocate for artists. He was an artist himself. He was already an accomplished writer at that point. And then also dealing with the mob. I think that was something that Al was dealing with that I don't know too many producers that were having to, go through Joe Colombo to get the approval rights for their movie to get made.
Yeah, and I want to get to Matthew, who played Robert Evans, in a moment. But I also wanted to just note that although Al Ruddy was the driving force behind the making of The Godfather, he didn't do it alone. Betty McCart, who is played by Juno Temple, at the time was Ruddy's secretary. And in this series, we see, get to see her as this very savvy player in Hollywood. She's making waves as a woman in Hollywood in the early 1970s. Nikki, can you talk a little bit about Betty's role in the making of The Godfather, some of the obstacles she faced in her career?
You know, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, Betty McCart was one of the characters that we knew the least about. You know, there isn't a lot about her online. There isn't a whole lot of resources. So we were basically using, you know, Al Ruddy as a guide for creating this character. And, you know, one of the interesting things that we realized early on is that Ruddy told us that Betty McCart was sort of had her finger on the pulse of Hollywood. And she was also a direct line to not only Al Ruddy, but a direct line to Charlie Bluedorn, and who was the head of Gulf and Western at the time. And we, you know, in the writer's room, we did a lot of thinking about what it meant to be a woman at that time, navigating, you know, the sexism of that time, and sort of came up with this character that was largely governed by putting it all out there, saying, you know, saying what was on her mind, being direct with, you know, everyone, all of the men that she was dealing with, and ended up being ridiculously successful, which, as we all know, you know, the obstacles that women are facing in 2002 are pretty up there. And so for Betty McCart to have had this kind of autonomy and power at that time really says something about her character.
And Matthew, you play the legendary film executive and Paramount Studios chief, Robert Evans. Can you tell us a bit about what role Evans played in getting The Godfather made, and what was the nature of his relationship with director Francis Ford Coppola?
Well, yeah, I mean, I can't. I think one of the things about Bob is he was a serious, real character, quite a bit eccentric. And I mean, I think our knowledge of him is now is he sort of almost became a slight caricature of himself. But we have to remember that he was a real tastemaker and made some films that really were, would probably not get made now. Things like Harold and Maud, I think people would be like, no, I'm not going to even attempt to try and put that love story on film. So, and he was under a lot of pressure. I mean, he had just made Love Story, which had made $100 million and was the biggest grossing film of the time. But Charlie Bluedorn and all the execs at Gulf and Western really, really did need him to continue making hits. And so The Godfather, obviously, I mean, he had a very good business brain. It was the biggest book of the year, so it wasn't exactly a no-brainer. But he was also running a ton of other films. He was running the studio, so as to say that he was every single day had his finger on the pulse of that film, I think would probably be a bit of a lie. But you know, when problems did occur, Al would have come to him, and then he would have been also a good mediator between Al Ruddy and Charlie Bluedorn, and trying to get extra finance and all these kind of things. So I think one of the great things about Bob is that he was, although the buck stopped with him and he had to make some difficult calls, he was very much a team player. And I think his output, you know, it was a real sweet spot in the era of Hollywood that Bob was involved in. Does that make any sense? I think so.
Yeah, it sort of speaks for itself when you talk about his resume and the films that he was instrumental in getting made. And Matthew, staying with you, we actually have an audience question about your experience playing this man who you said, you know, kind of turned into a caricature. Susie Rose wants to know, what was more difficult to endure, the overly floppy hair or the daily hourly spray tanning required to achieve Evans's signature lacquered baked ham look?
Well, the overly floppy hair, it was model's own. I don't like my hair in general. I much prefer to have a hat on, and it's got a bit of a wave and it's quite thick. Apparently when you're in your 40s, you should be very grateful about that. But the hair was fine. Listen, I mean, it was hardly an arduous task, but working on this job, it was a real honor. It was a treat. But when it comes to the spray tanning, which is just embarrassing, you know, you're suddenly somewhere in Beverly Hills, whipping off all your clothes down to your kegs, and you know, it's a different person every time, and you're like, oh, God, in this various ways you have to stand. But eventually it was becoming so expensive to do that I'm taking up a lot of makeup's budget. So they ended up just whacking on, like troweling on loads of makeup anyway. I would have loved to have sat out in the sun and did what Ray Winston did for Sexy Beast, where he got a serious, he was there for 6 months, I think, and got a great tan, but we just didn't have the time. And also I fear for skin cancer, the amount that I would have had to sit up to emulate Bob's color.
Yeah, we have the technology now, other ways of achieving the look. True to form, the making of The Offer, as with the making of The Godfather, wasn't without its challenges. There was the recasting of Armie Hammer, COVID-19, in the middle of a pandemic. Nikki, can you talk about some of the challenges you all faced and overcame to make this series?
I mean, we were fortunate enough to have, we had a great, you know, it was, I'm not going to say it wasn't difficult and, you know, and challenging. We had a great, you know, COVID team. So they were constantly informing us about, you know, what was happening with the CDC and making sure that, and just making sure that everybody on set was feeling, you know, was feeling safe. It's so funny. Hearing the name Armie Hammer, I've only ever seen Miles now in this role. It was, you know, we looked forward immediately, and Miles was the guy. He just had, you know, this amazing swagger in real life that echoes the swagger that Al Ruddy has, and Miles was just, you know, on set all the time, was just a great example, a great number one to be looking up to and following the rules, and it made the cast and crew, you know, want to do the same.
Miles, Al Ruddy wasn't the only thing navigating Hollywood, you know, to get Godfather made. I'm sorry, Al Ruddy wasn't only navigating Hollywood to get The Godfather made. As you mentioned, he was also contending with the mafia. Can you actually expand a little bit more on a point you made earlier about the role of the mafia in this story and how your character had to deal with that?
Well, I think that was one of the things when I was doing, you know, my research about it, what I don't think I really understood how involved the mob was with any production going on in New York at the time. I mean, they really, you know, kind of ran all the Teamsters. So any of these trucks coming in or out with equipment, you know, the mob knew about it. And you really did have to kind of, you know, wet their bill a little bit. You had to, you know, pay them off. They had to, in a lot of ways, they kind of, you know, they had to respect you as well. Al didn't have any money to give, so he wasn't able to go down that route. But there's a lot of stuff you can find online, apart from some of the stories that I got from Al. But Al told me on several different occasions he would be brought down a hall, through a room into a very small room, and you know, he was scared for his life. So, I mean, there's a lot out there, but I think that's kind of what I was a little surprised by. And I love the scene that we do in the show where Al invites them over to read the script. There is no middle act. He's got to kind of stuff some pages in there to make it look like a fully assembled script. And Al told me this story in person. He said he handed Joe the script and he didn't want to read it. Pass it to the next guy. Oh, I don't have my glasses, boss. Pass it to the next guy. Ah, come on. I don't want to be doing this. And he just said they passed it around like a hotcake because nobody, I think they would have been embarrassed to try and sit down and read a script in, you know, in front of people. So some of it is taken a bit comedically, but we're lucky that Al survived all that stuff so that he could give us these stories.
Miles, I'm wondering also if you can talk a little bit about how you struck this balance. At least, you know, when I was watching the series, you get the sense that Al Ruddy is supremely confident, but he's also unassuming in a way. And at the same time, we're watching him navigate these incredibly stressful situations. As you mentioned, that scene with the handing over the script and there being no middle act. How did you strike that balance?
Well, I think that is kind of the forward momentum of the piece. Is a problem comes to Al and he solves it. And there's not a ton of time dealing with the thinking about how to solve it, right? Like, it seems that Al, on the surface, yeah, appears unflappable. I think he's a man of action. So that was something that I think Dexter and I kind of found the balance of pretty early. There was something would come up in the scene and I would, you know, think about it for a little bit and then come back with an answer. And Dexter says, no. He said, you're playing a man of action, so don't overthink it. Just, you know, he's coming back with something pretty quick. And I think that's one of his gifts. And I think that was really my in to this guy, is that he just, his instincts, I think, for problem solving and dealing with people were spot on.
We have another audience question for Matthew. Catherine Adamack.
I don't know what happened, but I'm back.
Oh, you're back. Okay, good, because we have an audience question for you. You missed all of your colleagues saying wonderful things about you. So,
thank God.
But yeah, we have an audience question for you. Catherine Adamack from California asked, was it difficult to obtain visas for the British actors? That includes you and Juno Temple, because of the COVID shutdown of international travel. What impact did that have on the schedule?
Wow, that's quite a big boy question. There was a phenomenal amount of it was chock-a-block getting a visa in London, and so I ended up having to go to Budapest. Which was marvelous. So I sat in a room for 7 days in Budapest whilst that got sorted out. But I can't speak for Juno because I don't know what her process of what it was. She's worked a lot. Does she have a green card? I don't even know. I know she's obviously British, but she works a lot in America. So I don't know whether she already had an O-1 visa from another job. But isn't she marvelous?
Yeah, she's wonderful in the series, as are you. Yeah, for sure. I'm wondering if now, Nikki, wanted to ask you about The Godfather today. If The Godfather was made today, do you think it would be on a streaming service, or could it get made today, a film like this and a project like this?
I don't know. You know, I mean, I feel like, with the obstacles that, you know, that Al Ruddy, you know, had to face and overcoming, you know, making a film while simultaneously dealing with the mafia, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I think that one of the things that, you know, that we were always cognizant of in the writer's room was the fact that there was, you know, obviously a parallel between fighting to have, you know, fighting for creative integrity, fighting to have something made amidst big business, you know, at the time, Gulf and Western, you know, owned Paramount, you know, in 2022, you know, there's a lot of streaming services that are owned by, you know, tech companies or Viacom. And I think that the, you know, the underlying sort of moral of the story of The Offer and The Godfather at the time was how important it is to fight for your, you know, to fight for your vision, because, you know, we would have had a different movie if somebody else had been playing Michael Corleone or the Don, or, you know, if Al already hadn't been successful in you know, overcoming the obstacles that were set forth by the mafia, what would have happened then. So the long-winded answer to your question is that I don't know. I think as you know, as a creative person, I need to believe that it could get made when people recognize, you know, a beautiful script and a beautiful cast. And it all comes together. I want to believe that you can still fight for something like that and it can come to fruition.
I wanted to ask Miles or Matthew, either one, if you wanted to jump in on this. Was the experience of playing these characters, producer, film exec, kind of this give you a different sense or appreciation of you know, your actors and you're focused on your craft and here you are playing the people who are trying to make the project happen? Did it sort of pull you out of the experience in a way of being an actor, or was it like a meta experience of being so deep in a story about trying to make a movie?
Do you want to take that one, Mark, as you served as an exec producer on this as well as being an actor?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it was really, well, first of all, it was incredibly insightful. I think if you want a blueprint on how to be a producer, for better or worse, you're seeing a man, you know, really figure it out. He was a guy who, by the time he started producing film, especially getting something like The Godfather, didn't have a ton of experience under his belt. But I think for me, first of all, as actors, by the time we show up, we're already standing on the shoulders of so many people and so many hours in pre-production. But it was nice to know kind of, yeah, what goes on behind closed doors. And with Al, you know, with so many people putting their careers on the line for somebody else they believed in, to give somebody else that opportunity, I think it made me realize how that, I'm sure that's happened in my own career, and it's when unseen. So I thought this is a really beautiful insight into kind of the behind the scenes. And I think so many people just assume these suits are into it for the money, and you realize that no, in a lot of the ways they are, you know, they're just really advocating for people that they believe in, and the artists and the integrity of a project. And so for me personally, that was something I felt really privileged to kind of get a sense of.
And Matthew, not letting you off the hook, we have another audience question for you that just came in from Twitter. Nikki, she wants to know, did you learn anything about yourself while playing Bob Evans? Will it be a performance that will continue to resonate with you?
That's a nice question, Nikki. Obviously I learned a lot about The Godfather and the actual job, but for me also, it was one of the most joyful experiences that I've ever had on a set. Earmuffs, you two. I'm about to say some nice things. And it was double joy for me in some ways, because I wanted to work with those actors, a bunch of them, like 10 of them, for a really long time. And I get it all in one nice little neat cadeau with a little twirl on the top. And I really have to talk about, because a lot of my scenes were with Miles. Quite rare to have chunky scenes with just one other person or two other people. And also at the same time, I had the joy of working with in a sort of triumvirate with Bern Gorman and Chanks, Colin Hanks. And I mean that, like, you don't know what sort of sparring partner. Actually, that makes it sound competitive. It's not. That's not how I work. Some people do, but I don't. And it was just fabulous to go to work and see what they're doing. And you're just effectively keeping the energy of a scene and the ball in the air and trying to do it as intelligently and trying to do what your director wants most of the time too. But what I really learned was it was a real challenge, because I was very lonely in LA. It's a place that I've made peace with, but it's not somewhere that I feel particularly comfortable. Not LA necessarily, Hollywood. And so what I got out of it, Nikki, is I learned that I can be in a place and devote myself to this is going to sound so stupid, but devote yourself to something so wholly that you actually, I did so much homework on this. This is going to sound like I'm patting myself on the back, but I don't think very rarely did I forget a line, because I've done so much homework. Because if I wasn't on set, I was just in my room it became a sort of in joke that I had this enormous painting behind me on the sofa, and I was just in front of it, with talking to my friends every hour of the day on over the weekends. Anyway, blah blah blah. I learned that I can knuckle down during hard times. Could have just said that at the beginning.
Yes, but if you said that at the beginning, we wouldn't have had all the context. So thank you. In the few moments we have left, I wanted to ask each of you, and maybe we can start here with Nikki, if they remember when you first saw The Godfather, what that experience was like. And now, after having been so intimately involved with the story of making it, after making this series, will your impression of it be different? Has it changed? Nikki?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, I was like 11 or 12 and my father snuck me into a basement on a 13-inch TV and showed me The Godfather, much to my mother's dismay. And, at the time I just, you know, growing up an Italian American gal, I was like, oh, my family's on screen. And it was sort of refreshing to be watching this family, that I related to so much. And then, you know, over time, you know, my perception and the things that I appreciate about The Godfather has changed. And now that I have such an awareness about the film industry and what it takes to go into, you know, the making of a film, and then being, you know, on the Paramount set, you know, shooting on the same stages that The Godfather shot on, I think that, you know, my appreciation for the specificity of the process, everything from, you know, Gordy Willis's, you know, and his incredible lighting, and, you know, and Dean Tavolaris, who, you know, the production designer, and the choices that were made, and, you know, to make this film, and the casting and everything else. I think that, you know, having an awareness about the fight that it took, which, you know, generally mirrors the fights that you have to have as a showrunner on a daily basis, it was really sort of inspiring and eye-opening, and my appreciation for the film has, you know, grown tenfold since I came onto this project.
Miles, do you remember the first time you saw The Godfather?
The first time I saw it, I think I was just a teenager, and I caught it on TV for a little bit, and at that point I was probably, you know, very aware of the almost the parody of you know, Marlon Brando's performance, but I don't think I was really, I don't know how much of it I was absorbing. And then I saw it again when I was, you know, kind of going through drama school, and felt like I really gave a pretty tuned in watch to it. And I was just really struck by the tension of the entire piece and the lighting. I remember the lighting and feeling like I had never, you know, really seen anything like that before. And I mean, it will always be remembered as one of the greatest films ever made. You don't get that many contributing parts kind of working really at the top of their game. It's a once in a generation, you know, once in a lifetime achievement, what they were all able to accomplish together.
Matthew, in 1 minute left, do you remember the first time, or any other thoughts you want to add to this conversation?
Any other thoughts? Anything?
Well, it's been a
pleasure. Anything that's on your mind, Matthew?
Not anything related to this.
Gordy Willis was a genius. They're the master of the dark arts, the DOPs, the director of photographies, and so I've always been endlessly fascinated with that. And I think someone should mention the music. I mean, what a theme! And that, if we're talking about iconic, you hear it just takes you there instantaneously the minute you hear it, and that's so it's got so much going for it, this film. It's just always a treat.
Well, unfortunately, we will have to leave it there. Thanks for mentioning the music. I will be pulling up the Godfather score after this to listen to it. I wanted to thank everyone who joined us today, Miles Teller, Matthew Good, and Nikki Toscano. Thank you for joining us here on Washington Post Live.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening. For more information on our upcoming programs, go to WashingtonPostLive.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.